Hello, and welcome to another thrill-packed, full of fact and lacking tact episode of the Texas Tribune Tribcast. This is Dee Sexton, Intergovernmental Relations Officer for Travis County. Like many of my fellow Texans, I am looking for cogent analysis and thoughtful insight into this week's primary elections. But in the meantime, I will be listening to the Tribcast. Here's your host, Reeve Hamilton, and this week's merry band of Tribcasters.
Thank you. This is reporter Reeve Hamilton here with the Tribcast for the last week of May, first week of June, the end of May, we'll say. Joining me is executive editor Ross Ramsey.
Howdy.
Editor Emily Ramshaw.
Hello there.
And golden voice Jay Root.
I'm here.
He and his merry band little of
Disney
brothers
birds or whatever. It's flying around his head.
You know? If you didn't believe it when I said it, I mean, you believe it when Jay says it.
Absolutely.
He is here.
100%.
We are all running on a few hours of sleep following last night's primary, which we will discuss. Right? I think, as the song goes, there are only two things that money can't buy, and that's true love and a Senate race without a runoff, it sounds like. Or for that matter, a place in the runoff in SD25. I'm pretty sure that's how it went. What do you make of the situation Dewhurst and Cruz find themselves in now?
And there's not a good way. There's not a way to read this that's good for Dewhurst. I mean, he can say, you know, with some rationale, you know, we're going to win this, we're going to do that, we're going to do the other thing. But there's nothing good about being in a runoff if you position yourself as the incumbent in a race and you position yourself as the establishment guy, and then this guy who's storming the castle pulls you into another 60 days of fight. And he also risks nationalizing this race. You know, that there's nothing else to write about in politics right now. The presidential race is over, as you wrote, Jay, because of Texas. You know, Romney sealed the thing. So everybody looking for a story says, well, what about this trend in the Senate with the Indiana thing with Lugar and the Nebraska thing with, I can't remember the lady's last name.
Deb Fisher.
We were already getting national calls today. I mean, NPR was calling, Politico did a bunch of things. So I do think you do really risk nationalizing this. Everybody was talking about Texas today, which is not what Dewhurst wants to be happening.
Right. So if you're outside the state and you are the kind of person who's willing to throw a dollar at a challenger candidate in a race like this, and all of a sudden this Texas thing's getting this, you know, national play, you know, people around the country are going to look at Ted Cruz and say, well, maybe that's where my next political dollar goes.
I think that there are some definite similarities with the Lugar situation and with probably Bob Bennett in 2010 might be a better one, because in the Deb Fisher example in Nebraska, it was sort of like lightning striking. She wasn't supposed to win. The Club for Growth actually got behind a different candidate, right, and she won. But the insurgent has stopped David Dewhurst and now has forced him into a runoff. Right. So that's definitely, so, you know, there is a little bit of that trend line. I think what's different, though, is that Dewhurst, even though he is portrayed as less moderate or less conservative and the more moderate, I mean, look at it. It amazes me how this legislative session in 2011, they cut education spending. They passed probably the toughest sonogram bill in the country, voter ID. This was a conservative explosion of legislation, and yet, all of these people are still not conservative enough.
Right, we're talking really about amazing. Teeny tiny degrees of conservatism here. I mean, I can't really see how far apart any of these guys are on anything.
They got almost everything on the grocery list last session. You know, it's kind of interesting that you would come out and say, well, I got everything on my list. Boy, am I unhappy.
What about TSA screenings?
That's the one holdout.
Well, but you sort of have like two factions. Because, I mean, Rick Perry, who has refashioned himself as a Tea Party conservative since at least 2009, or, you know, when he going into his race with Kay Bailey Hutchison, and he's with Dewhurst. So you have sort of the, you know, it's not like some crazy, wild-eyed moderate against a true-blood conservative. I mean, the lines are not that distinct, you know, not that
How do the Tea Party folks reconcile their, you know, support for Rick Perry and his support for David Dewhurst?
Well, it's interesting. Joe Strauss had a little presser today where he was talking about the, we're recording this the day after the election. He's talking about the the election results, and one of the things he said, you know, somebody asked him, do you support Dewhurst? And he said, you know, at some point you have to look at this, and you can't really separate my record as a legislative leader from David Dewhurst's record as a legislative leader from Rick Perry's record as a governor during that period of time. And what's interesting about that is not just that Joe Strauss is saying it, but that David Dewhurst has said a version of that, and Rick Perry has said a version of that. They've said, look, this is, you know, this is the conservative fabric of the state. This is what you get. And, you know, it makes you wonder if this is really completely about policy and politics, or if this is, you know, to some extent about style, about incumbency.
Right,
about
our guys and your guys.
Well, about people's real deep dissatisfaction with Congress and their and conflating that with every other politician they see.
But was, is there any sort of clear theme from the sort of cumulative results where you can say this was about picking, you know, Tea Party conservatives over traditional conservatives, or throwing the incumbents out? Because it seems to me like, you know, maybe, you know, some people are quick to say, oh, horrible night for Strauss. He lost some lieutenants, but it wasn't a horrible night in that he won pretty easily, you know. And there are some moderate incumbents got tossed out, but he also lost Leo Berman,
Wayne Christian. Yeah.
Conservatives thrown out for moderates. I mean, you know, there goes Marva Beck, and here comes Trent Ashby. Mm-hmm.
I think in almost every case, though, the more conservative candidate, or the one who voters perceived as the more conservative candidate, won. Now, Wayne Christian is definitely an exception because, but you know, that was very close, and it was an incredibly redrawn district. I mean, that was an 80% new district for him, right?
Right.
So, you know, you had that, but. If you look at every other race, and I'm not sure about the Marva Beck, Trent Ashby situation, but in almost every other race, the conservative candidate won. So it's you still have to run a credible campaign. I mean, you know, at the end of the day, if you have bad candidates, you know, whether you're more conservative or whatever, you're not going to win. But in the cases where incumbents lost on the in the Republican side, you know, it was pretty much the conservative right. who won. So I think that's the trend.
Berman got beat from his right?
He did. He absolutely did.
Where is his right?
That's what we were talking about. It's like, how could Leo Berman, of all people, not be considered conservative? But one of the things that the opponents did, and Matt Beebe did this to obviously no effect, but I interviewed him, they had this whole truth in budgeting thing, mm-hmm. which was a way to say, forget all that you heard in the legislative session about how this was the most conservative ever. They lied to you. This really wasn't conservative. And there is a little bit of a grain of truth to it on the Medicaid thing, because as we all know, they pretty much put 18 months of Medicaid funding in a 2-year budget. So there's going to be a huge supplemental on Medicaid funding, but that was very common theme throughout all of these races.
And what were the biggest surprises? Obviously, I referenced it a little bit earlier. It's just in Senate District 25, which is one of the ones I was watching. You had Donna Campbell, who had significantly less money than Elizabeth Ames Jones, who was backed by Texas for Lawsuit Reform, and the incumbent Jeff Wentworth come in a very close second to Wentworth, beating out Jones, who had the most money of the right. three. I mean, that was a surprise, although you had started to hear some chatter about that heading into it. But it still seemed to catch a lot of people off guard. Yeah. Lloyd Doggett having an easy race was a surprise.
I mean, I think that's a big surprise. Lloyd Doggett, you know, everybody's been talking for weeks about how this was going to be his hardest race. And, you know, I mean, what did he end up winning with, 70% of the vote or something? Mm-hmm. Same with Eddie Bernice Johnson. You know, this was supposed to be her toughest primary. She had, you know, these folks who were getting some support from this super PAC, the Campaign for Primary Accountability, at least at first. You know, and she soared through with 70% too. I think, you know, Ross and I were talking about a couple of other campaign surprises. I think we were talking about Rob Eisler a little bit. You know, he's someone who lost with, what, $650,000 left in the bank?
Yeah. You wonder, did you not know the money was there? Did you not really want to win this thing?
Right.
What?
Fiscal conservatism.
Yeah.
I guess.
I mean, I guess.
You know, there's always that sort of, you know, there are always a couple of stories every election cycle of somebody who held a couple of dollars in abeyance because they thought they might have a runoff. Eisler doesn't have that excuse. There were only two guys in the race. It's just like, you know, if you got it, go.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't make sense. There was the Mike Jackson race.
I would say my big, so I have two surprises for the podcast today. Surprise number one was Mike Jackson, Senator Mike Jackson, who was supposed to get into a runoff. In fact, I feel kind of embarrassed now. So to all those readers who read my CD36 story.
Oh, yeah.
I basically said, you know, it looks like Mike Jackson will be in a runoff with somebody. We don't know who that is yet. And Steve Stockman and a guy named Stephen Tekash ended up in a runoff, and both of those guys told me they were trying to get into a runoff with Mike Jackson. Well, Mike Jackson came in third, and Stephen Tekash spent a lot of his own money and really worked very hard, and Steve Stockman pretty much raised almost nothing. Mm-hmm. And put up signs that said "Re-elect Steve Stockman." He served one term in 1995, and so that was somewhat controversial. Surprise number two
is everybody gets a car. Right. Every listener,
all right. Or an iPhone. Here's surprise number
Look
two.
Look under your chair,
and I'm going to have to quote Ken Herman, because Ken Herman said one time to me that right when you think Democrats have hit rock bottom, they find a new floor to go through. And surprise number two is just the pathos of the Texas Democratic Party.
Can I say something about
It's unbelievable.
You're going to talk about Keisha Rogers?
I'm going to talk about Grady Yarbrough.
All right.
So everyone was expecting Paul Sadler to be in a runoff, possibly with Sean Hubbard, who was this young guy on the Democratic side who had all this buzz around him.
He was polling like in second place, ends up finishing last.
The winner in the polls was nobody. I mean, Everybody was like, now who are these guys again?
What party is this?
Right, exactly.
So Sadler ends up in a runoff with this guy, Grady Yarbrough, who's an educator.
Right, that's all anybody really knows. He's a, quote, educator.
Well, and it seems like, as far as our reporters can tell at this time, it's possible he hasn't filed any FEC reports. It's like, it doesn't seem
to... He had
no
campaign finance reports.
He was called last night, he did not seem to be aware of the election results.
He said, I spent some money.
Yeah. I spent some money. I did some stuff.
Well, now, Aman Bathija, our reporter, is the one who alerted him to he didn't know he was in a runoff.
But he said he had a game plan.
But it's one of those weird things where it's like, you know, who is the structure behind any of these people, and what is it doing? The other situation nearby is Keisha Rogers and CD22 in Fort Bend County.
The quote-unquote Democrat who wants to impeach Obama.
She is
twice
she's a
now.
Devotee of Lyndon LaRouche.
Right.
And she wants to impeach Obama. In one campaign video online, they basically insinuate that Obama should be executed. I mean,
she wants to colonize Mars.
She's very extreme in her views.
She doesn't want humans to become extinct.
It just goes to show
you. Last year she won the Democratic primary, and they said, this year we won't let that happen. So this year she was a known quantity.
This is all they talked about in
their
race.
They were constantly organizing against her.
Right.
And the guy just couldn't. She won by a few votes. I mean, there's a recount going on.
Texas is like Utah with 10 times the population. I mean, it's just, it's unbelievable. I mean, you know, I'm not surprised. Surprise that the Democratic Party is doing poorly, but their collapse is so thorough, it's so complete that it just continues to fascinate. $200,000 they raised less than $200,000. All four Democratic candidates, Harold Simmons, a single donor to the Super PAC, spent five times as much money on David Dewhurst. David Dewhurst spent more on the right side of the decimal point of his contributions than the Democrats, all of them spent. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just, they're dead. The Democrats are dead, dead, dead.
And that's your podcast.
Is there any
I got nothing.
any silver lining in that rain cloud, Jen?
Well, I mean, it's like there's almost no earthly explanation for. You have to go to the cosmos to see a party. a political party that you know, Lyndon Johnson's Texas Democratic Party is just, I mean, what other big state? Florida has elected some statewide people, Democrats. I mean, but every state that touches Texas, Oklahoma, Arkansas, Louisiana, New Mexico, they all have had Democrats get elected statewide. Obviously, California, New York. So every big state and every state that touches Texas, you know, what is it about Texas that does they have nothing going?
I will say, so the argument that the Rogers people, for example, could make is that maybe they just represent the views of that district. You know, maybe that district just wants to impeach Obama and pump him full of lethal injection drugs.
I don't think that's right.
It seems like crazy. If you have this established party structure as the Democrats are theoretically should be as one of the two major parties in the state, they should be able to overcome that if they're organizing.
Well, you wrote a story, Reeve, that said basically the Fort Bend County chair said, you know, we are going to endorse the other opponent. That may not be enough. We may actually have to, like, you know, campaign against her. And clearly that didn't work either.
No, I mean, the thing is, it's not as big a story just because, you know, because they're Democrats in that district, they're supposed to sort of, whoever was going to win was expected to not fare well against their Republican opponent.
Pete Olson, right.
So, I mean, it's like fairly shocking that someone could get elected on the Keisha Rogers platform just because it's so fringe. At the same time, you're not going to see that in the news as much as, you know, I don't know, any of the other races we mentioned so far.
I mean, this is market-based. I mean, part of this is the Republicans are much more popular than the Democrats. So the Republicans got 1.4 million votes on Election Day and in early voting in this election. Mm-hmm. The Democrats got 587,000. So the other way to look at that is only 2 million people or thereabouts voted in this election. There's about 19 million voting-age adults in the state of Texas. Where is everybody? You get these weird bounces and these strange results, and, you know, and we always seem surprised. But, you know, it's because the turnout's low. Very few people participate. The people who do participate are, in some cases, the most fervent parts of their parties. It's the most Democratic Democrats and the most Republican Republicans, and you sometimes get results that look odd to people who aren't in those two wings. It's just, you know.
Especially in May and now July.
Right, right.
Yeah, what is the runoff going to be like? Who is going to vote in the July 31st?
Like five
31st
people. I mean,
election?
What's turnout going to look like? Honestly, what's turnout going to be in July?
No telling. I mean, the Texas.
Honestly, it's going to be great.
A billion years ago, the Texas primaries were in July. They used to be in the last 2 weeks of July, and Lyndon Johnson moved them in 1960
to May. Right.
So May used to be sort of
the
great date, and then they moved them to March for the Super Tuesday primaries and all of that stuff. We were supposed to have, this is just sort of an asterisk now, the runoffs were supposed to be next week. If we'd stayed on the original schedule, if they hadn't blown up the redistricting stuff, we'd have had March elections and June runoffs.
So. Can we just go back to that?
why did they do a 9-week runoff? That's never happened, right?
I mean,
they had the
MOVE Act. So they had to build in all of these times for people to put ballots out, send them to troops and to overseas people and get them all back and everything. And you can't vote electronically, so it all had to be on paper. You got to register people and have that loop, and then you've got to have the vote loop. It takes 9 weeks.
You know, I think that Texas generally is sort of an establishment type. I mean, establishment politicians tend to win. And I think that Dewhurst is sort of facing a perfect storm in a way. I mean, he's still, I think you still have to say he's the favorite to win this runoff. But if he does lose, then, you know, people are going to look back at it and say, I mean, like the federal courts, I mean, it's lasted so much longer, a 9-week runoff. I mean, it's like people are going to have time to actually examine the alternatives, whereas usually establishment guy, and I think this is one of the reasons why we do went from one party rule Democrat to one party rule Republican, is just it takes so much money to get your message out. I mean, you just blow money out of a cannon. You know, the Democrats can't even afford like 2 days of television. But you know, if Cruz ends up winning, I think we're going to look back and go, wow, I mean, this was everything just lined up for Cruz.
Well, one of the other things that you just got to mention in this is that we've spent the last 3 years or so watching establishment politicians tell people to tear down the establishment. And now they're tearing down the establishment. What a surprise. Yeah. You know, I mean, Dewhurst and Perry have been out there saying, you know, we need to rail against these people in Washington and these, you know, embedded politicians.
But keep
and everything.
Voting for us over and over.
After a while, you know, you become what you're cursing.
Mm-hmm.
So what else we got?
Well, we could, you know, did any of the results last night change the math for the speaker's race? Heading into the election day, Brian Hughes filed to challenge Strauss for speaker. What are his odds?
You know, Brian uses an interesting case because he's a conservative Republican trial lawyer. And all of those words sort of put off some crowd or another. Conservative Republican puts off the Democrats that he would need to challenge a Republican speaker. And trial lawyer puts off the Republicans who would otherwise, you know, be running from the speaker. So, you know, he might not be the right candidate. I think some of the sentiment to change the speaker is still there. And this is, you know, Strauss had a race. He defeated Craddock in 2009. Shoot, the House has had a speaker's race every 2 years for probably the last decade and a half. And they're kind of accustomed to the fight. But I don't know that they have, you know, all respect to Brian Hughes, I'm not sure that they have a candidate that they'll form around against Joe Strauss in the way that they formed around Paxton 2 years ago or even Chisholm 2 years ago. Paxton has moved on to the Senate. And Chisholm is running for Railroad Commission. So those two guys are gone. I'm not sure the opposition has a has got a candidate for the not Strauss vote.
Well, even when they formed around Paxton, they got up to 15 votes in the House.
Well, and they went into a Republican caucus, and they said, let's just settle this in the Republican caucus on the theory that that was the most conservative part of the House. And the Republican caucus went, no, we're going to stick with Strauss.
I think it's sort of a continuation of the primary, kind of in a way. So the activists that really went out there and, you know, tried to elect conservatives, and they come in and go, okay, it's we're not done. We've got one more thing to do. We need to take out this moderate speaker. I think you would have to have, you know, who knows? I mean, maybe things will be different in January, but I think you would have to have some rallying around point to take him out. I mean, there just doesn't seem to be the anger. I mean, again, this was a pretty conservative legislative session in 2011, so I don't see the stars aligning the way they did against Craddock, for example.
Yeah, not yet. I agree with that.
Well, which race do you think will have the most impact on the situation next session? Not even necessarily on the speaker's race, but just seems like Eisler losing.
Wendy Davis in Fort Worth, I think.
And that determines, the balance in the Senate.
Right. So we had these six Senate seats. Four Republican senators decided not to seek reelection. And each of those is being replaced by somebody who's at least as conservative and in several cases more conservative. Mm-hmm. A couple of cases a lot more conservative than the people they're replacing. The fifth one is this Wentworth race that's still open. And, you know, we'll get a runoff here and we'll figure out whether we're getting Jeff Wentworth or Donna Campbell in a district that's built for a Republican. And then the sixth race is the only really contested race in a general election in the Senate right now. The only one that looks like it'll be a close race is this Wendy Davis race. She's a Fort Worth Democrat. It's a Republican district. She'll be running against a House member, Mark Shelton, who won last night. She's a more dynamic candidate than he is. She's a better known candidate than he is. She's one of the few Democrats who's won on the turf she's running on. And I think both sides are going to be fighting really hard for that. And it's the 12th vote in the Senate. It's sort of the insurance vote Democrats have against Republican things they don't want to vote on. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think that's probably if any one race has everything sitting on it. I'm not sure any one race does, but if anyone does, that's probably it.
Well, and what about Eisler losing his race, which means that both of the chairmen of public education are going to be in both chambers are going to be new next session, when I'm sure public education will be as contentious an issue as it always is.
Yeah, I mean, you have a huge void there going into yet another session where we're going to be talking about, you know, cutting spending as opposed to replacing some of those funds. But, you know, I think there are folks who would argue that public school funding was a total mess, even when you had all these very smart people at the helm. So, I don't know. I mean, that's sort of TBD.
Yeah, sort of the establishment version of this is Florence Shapiro's leaving the Senate, and Scott Hochberg and Rob Eisler are leaving the House.
Yeah,
and
the
Robert
brain
Scott
trust
left
is leaving,
TEA, and the courts are convening in October to have all of these lawsuits, and it's going to be Armageddon with a bunch of inexperienced troops, and it'll work out. You know, I mean, you sort of, you know, it's a reboot, and it, you know, it may be that they need a reboot. Mm-hmm. It may be that we get to this point next year and we're going, wow, that was a train wreck. But we may be looking at it and say, well, you know, the fresh blood.
Oh, those fresh eyes.
Right.
Yeah. Well, anyone you're particularly going to miss, even if maybe they might not be the most consequential, but who?
I mean, Rob Eisler had the best puns in the Texas legislature. You always knew you were going to get some totally cheesy joke if you walked up to him.
So there's
true.
That.
Yeah, that is true.
We do need to say that the grudge match between Al Edwards and Boris Miles is probably over now.
I don't know. They did five Rocky movies. Over? What have we got here now?
We've
got.
Well, I mean, Boris won. That? Boris won, and you know, I think that he's probably put that behind him.
We're to Dolph Lundgren versus Apollo Creed now, right?
Right.
You don't think there's an Al Edwards spinoff?
I don't think so.
He's calling it a day.
Well, I mean, he's 75, but I don't know.
Delwyn Jones ran again in Lubbock. He turned 89 last month.
Yeah, and got creamed, didn't he?
He did get creamed.
Yeah.
Well,
Ralph Hall won.
Tommy Merritt's not coming back either, so he's a colorful character that we won't have around.
David Simpson is equally colorful.
They keep inventing new ones. I mean, you sit here for a while and you go, oh, it's a shame so-and-so's leaving, and they bring somebody else in, and you go, this will be fun.
Right.
Well, you know, we should also mention that the trial lawyers really got their you-know-whats kicked in this election. Their butts kicked. The trial lawyers
did.
Yeah,
yeah.
They
have to bleep.
Well,
that
they put they put a whole lot of money. I mean, they sort of took a page out of Texans for Lawsuit Reform and decided to play in Republican primaries. They had done it in a couple of House races. I know in the Lance Gooden race, they did it in 2010, I believe, when they took out Betty Brown.
Right.
But they played. This was on an unprecedented scale. Pumped a bunch of money into Dave Norman, who was running against Larry Taylor. Steve Mostyn put $275,000 of his own money into it. And then entities that he had given to and that other trial lawyers had given to also gave handily or a lot of money to Dave Norman. Todd Smith just got killed by Kelly Hancock. They gave a bunch of money to Todd Smith.
Was that a surprise?
I was surprised at the gap in that race. I
mean, at the margin, yeah.
It's just one of those. This is one of those cases where the intelligence is not that intelligent. You know, mm-hmm. you hear the lobby talking about this, and you hear the consultants talk about it.
Yeah, I thought that was going to be kind of neck and neck.
Almost all of them were saying, "Yeah, it's a tight race. There's a lot of money," and I think they get blinded by the money a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But clearly, I mean, you know, when you see the results, like you got
Donna Campbell.
When you see the early vote was the same as the late vote. This thing was 65-35 2 weeks ago,
right?
Mm-hmm. It's been 65-35 for 2 weeks, solid. Kelly Hancock beat him back in the middle of the month.
But bringing up Donna Campbell, it wasn't like the night was an overwhelming success for TLR and the tour reformers.
No, but you know, that race isn't over yet, so we don't know, and I don't know if they're going to give a whole bunch of money to what's her name, Donna Campbell. Donna Campbell. Yeah.
I'm curious to see. Jay and I were talking about this a while ago. I'm curious to see whether the business people in San Antonio, having gone after Wentworth and getting him into a runoff, but those people were comfortable with Elizabeth Ames Jones. They just don't know Donna Campbell as well. And she comes from the Tea Party group. She comes from a more, you know, radical conservatism than they're used to. And I'm curious to see if the San Antonio business people who wanted to replace Wentworth are still after Wentworth now that the alternative is Donna Campbell. I think TLR probably stays in the race because their mission the whole time was, you know, kill Wentworth.
They want to get rid of Wentworth. They don't care
who it is.
Exactly.
Ben Philpott, who is not with us this afternoon, talked to Donna Campbell today and asked her.
Ben's right here. He's just been quiet.
Yeah, right. Exactly. He's so quiet normally. And asked Donna Campbell if, you know, basically, does she want TLR's support? And she said no. She said she doesn't want their financial support because she doesn't want to fight anybody else's battles. We'll see how long that lasts.
You know, she was pretty open in her, you know, I interviewed her before the election, obviously. And she was saying, like, it's ridiculous that Elizabeth Ames Jones is bringing up tort reform all the time. That's, like, not a major issue anymore. You know, maybe she doesn't, but it's hard to turn down money.
Ben also said when he talked to her, she was in the emergency room back, you know, at her job. Like, she went back to work at 7 a.m. the morning after the election.
She was doing that throughout the campaign. Yeah.
She got great marks from people who, you know, aren't political people necessarily or who are political people that are just living, you know, local politics and stuff. They would have these forums and the three of them would be there and people were coming out saying, you know, she was very impressive. I hadn't heard much about her. And, you know, she got here kind of the old-fashioned way. She had a good message, and she worked really, really hard. And she waited for the two front runners. This is a little bit like Nebraska. She waited for the two front runners to tear each other to pieces and walked up the middle.
Right. Well, now that we've torn each other to pieces, I think it's time for us to say goodbye. If you have questions or comments, or, you know, if you'd like to respond to Jay in particular, you can email... jroot@texastribune.org.
The golden voice.
Tribcast at texastribune.org. On behalf of Jay, Emily, Ross, and our producer, Todd, this is Reeve. Thanks for listening.
Make sure that we delete this audio.
Yeah, seriously.